138 years this group has been organized and working on policies across the state of Montana that have had impact, like water policy, land conservation policy, and how important is agriculture and our stock growers to our economy in Montana? Tremendously important. We're talking about that here today, and a pleasure to welcome you from Montana for Montana. It's Voices of Montana. Tom Schultz alongside. I know we got to Friday here. There's some excitement about that. Only two more working days this week. Good. Keep hanging in there. Hopefully there's at least a peak of a Montana weekend for you to enjoy out there somewhere. We've been doing it 20 years plus now, two decades strong, working on three. And a Friday edition is live from the Montana Stock Growers Association. And a bit later on, Karen Butt Phelan should be joining us. She's the one who, a legal counsel, a lot as we talk about land policy, American Prairie Reserve. They're now just known as American Prairie. But their Serengeti dreams, so to speak, or plans, a lot of conflict with Montanans. We'll discuss that a bit later on. Jim Steinbeiser will be with us. He's the past president. I think maybe even almost about right now, he's being outed. He is being outed as president. And the guy who is going to be in it or incoming is John Grandy, and joins us now. Good morning, John. How you doing?
Well, good morning, Tom. I'm doing great. And yeah, not quite yet. Jim's actually upstairs at a committee meeting presenting some of our policy initiatives right there. And when he does get outed, as you say, he's not going very far. We've still got a few things we need to keep him very involved in. So, later today, I guess, or as of tomorrow, he won't officially be our president anymore, but he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's good. And I said this yesterday, and I talked with Bob Rowe and Brian Bird and from Northwestern Energy. And, Bob is the one who's retiring. Brian's going to take over for him. And I said, in 6 months from now, I would love to be a fly on the wall at coffee between you two, you know, in terms of what leadership looks like. John Grandy's position as first vice president now moving in, and in 6 months from now, what it looks like from Jim Steinbeiser's position looking back. What kind of leadership, John, is needed? What kind of direction do you need to go? I know you look at issues and they're important, and that kind of drives the agenda a little bit. But what is the direction leadership needs to take? We talk about stock growers.
Well, I can tell you, Tom, we're extremely fortunate that way. You're right. Everybody has a different leadership style, and I'll do things a little differently than Jim does things. But as far as the direction we're going, we're in a great place. And with Leslie Robinson as our second vice president, yeah, about to move up to first vice president, the three of us are very closely in line with different leadership styles, but goals and where we're going and how we need to manage the association. We are very closely in line with that. So as I take over from Jim, it's not about going to be reversing course and coming up with new priorities. It's about carrying on the work that's already been done. And from a staff level, we've seen some changes. Obviously, in the last few months, we lost a couple of very important key staff members. But we've replaced him with our new executive vice president, Rayleigh Honeycutt, and we'll start actually, I think, as soon as next week, interviewing to hire a couple other positions. So the staff makeup's going to look different. And as much as we miss the staff members we've lost, because
right,
there's some good ones that have done wonderful things for this.
All in. They were all in.
So as much as we miss them, by having this turnover at one time, it's allowed us to take a broader look at this and say, you know, do we need to replace those positions exactly the way they've been in the past, or looking forward to the future, do we need a little different business model? Do we need to redefine job descriptions and hire a little different kind of staff? So that gives us the opportunity to do things. So the makeup of the staff is going to be a little different going forward, and as you mentioned, we'll have different officers, but by and large, things are going really well, and it's more about staying the course than about a revolutionary new way.
Yeah, and I appreciate that as well, and things will come up. That's just the nature of it, the unexpected, so to speak. What have you dealt with in the past that maybe, and this can go anywhere, but in your career, Martinsdale family since 1877. I mean, I really appreciate that. I think you couldn't pull your roots out with a caterpillar, I'm sure. But what has you look back in your family or in the industry maybe came unexpectedly that your industry can learn from or didn't learn from? And I know that might take some time to think about. Maybe something comes to mind. What are those big issues over the years that maybe you missed on or maybe you hit it out of the park on?
Well, that's a tough one to answer, but I mean, what comes to mind is unfortunately, in some ways, how little the issues have changed. If you go back when our association was founded in 1884, they were talking somewhat about bison. They were definitely talking about wolves. You know, then it wasn't too much longer when you got into the early 1900s, you start the creation of the Forest Service and issues with the government. And for better or worse, we're still dealing with a lot of those same issues. And that might be frustrating to some people in the sense that, well, right, look at what we've done for all these years and we aren't gaining any ground, but we have gained ground and look where we might be if we hadn't been active in these issues for all this time. So, we just got to keep working on it every day. And you bring up a good point, and that's something that we look at with dealing with a lot of our partners and a lot of the association past presidents and past board members, and that there's a wealth of knowledge there that we got to keep going back to those people and learning from them about what they think they did right and what they think they did wrong in their tenure with the association, and again, kind of keep us from reinventing the wheel.
John Grandy is with us, Martinsdale, a producer and first vice president, will be soon is now the incoming president, and we'll have that. Do they hand you a gavel, or is it more of like a bullwhip or something?
I'm not aware of that, Tom, but I get asked that a lot. You know, when is my official right. installation? And also, so many people ask me, have you got your speech ready? And I'm like, it makes me a little nervous. I keep asking the staff, is there something you're not telling me? Because I don't think I'm giving a speech. And no, I don't have one prepared, but I hope they're not springing something on me.
They will. This is where you're at right now. You know. Oh, by the way, in 10 minutes, you've got an interview with the New York Times. Can you make that?
I actually brought that up this morning, yeah.
Hey, what are the issues? And let me ask this first. So, because as I look at stock growers and you know what you guys do, it's noted here in some of the literature, a lot of issues to talk about. You talked about bison, there's bears, I want to sage grouse. But what is the advantage? What 138 years, where is the stock growers at now? Membership is not that hard for people. I mean, I could be a member of the Stock Growers Association.
Right. It is hard in the sense that you got to do the work. You got to get out and talk to people, and you can advertise or put it on your website all you want, and people don't just come flocking to join an association like ours. They join because their friends are involved and because they're asked. So you have to do the work, which is good. It should be that way.
Yeah,
but it's exciting, and I credit this to our staff and our leadership of President Jim Steinbeiser. In the last year, our membership has been up 26%.
Wow.
So we're growing, and why should people be involved? It's for the issues that we're about to get into that, you know, I tell people, you know, we'll have two full-time lobbyists on staff during the legislature working on issues, and for the cost most people pay in Montana stock grower dues, they could hire their own lobbyists to represent them for about half a day rather than having two people for the entire session and year-round on the issues that go on between sessions. So that's wonderful. But beyond just the advocacy work we do during the session and everything, it's coming here and making the friends and learning from people. And that's where the excitement builds when you're growing and have that kind of increase in membership. And when you can come to a convention like this and talk to people like you, talk to all the exhibitors that our allied industry partners are here at the trade show, it's just this is the place to be because you can learn so much and have fun.
The issues then, let's hit one or two of them. I mean, bison and wolves and grouse and then water policy. I don't know. Pick one.
Well, just very quickly, because you already mentioned Karen Bud Fallon's going to be visiting with you here within the hour.
Hopefully.
And she'll be speaking here at 10 o'clock. So I won't get into that too deeply, but I will say that Karen represents the Montana stock growers as well as the North and South Phillips County grazing districts in our appeal against the BLM. And I think the only thing I'll say about that is that's really important to keep in mind is that, you know, we're not litigating against the American Prairie. You know, whether you like what they're doing, whether you don't like what they're doing, it's the BLM that made a bad decision to allow the American Prairie to do some things on their grazing allotments that go against, you know, a century of good natural resource management. And so our issue is with the BLM and what they're allowing the American Prairie to do. But you and Karen can talk a lot more about that. You mentioned the water court. That's a big issue. You know, the water court was formed back in the 70s, early 80s to just for the purpose of adjudicating water rights. Looking into the future, once the water right adjudication is completed, what will the role of the water court be, if any, or will it just completely go away? The governor and his office, Lieutenant Governor Kristen Juris, have done a lot of work looking into the future and looking at this, and they're going to be coming forward with a bill to have the water court in the future in four divisions based on basins, so it won't be any judicial districts, but based on basins, so all the water in the stream will be governed by the same judge, but to have four divisions, so four water court judges, and they can administer that in the future. There's issues with this because a lot of people really like going to their local district courts, but the issue is some of the district courts are great. Some of the district courts, those judges just don't know the first thing about water rights. And that's not an insult. They would say the same thing themselves.
It's true, yes. Yeah,
yeah, and so having experts in water law, which there aren't that many of them around, to have them adjudicate this, or to not just for adjudication, but to have them look at these conflicts in the future, we think that makes a lot of sense. You know, our one issue with the bill, as the lieutenant governor and her staff are with other people, I don't want to say it's just them, have drafted. Currently, they're looking at these water court judges initially being appointed by the governor and then being followed up by a retention election. We agree that the governor should initially appoint them. After that, we'd like to see a full election where anybody can run against those judges rather than just a retention election. So that's the one amendment we'd really like to see to the legislation I think is going to be adopted. But by and large, we applaud the work those folks have done in coming up with a vision for the future.
And again, that's one of those areas that you know when you're going to wade into it, if you pardon the pun, it's going to get deep in a hurry too, because it's very important to people. And then changes to that court, and you know, how do you foresee consequences there, and so yeah, we'll be following that. Thanks for that information. No. You know, just got a couple of minutes here, John. The commitment that you have and the stock growers have to the state of Montana, just express that in some way, because I'm impressed. I'm an everyman, and you can just see it around this convention that when people talk about these issues, and it's not just their business, it's their families, it's their communities, it's their state. Can you put words into that?
I'm not sure I can, but yeah. I was talking to someone just earlier this morning talking about some people from outside our industry. They're great, great people, but don't necessarily understand this, that you work 40, 60, however many hours a week at your core job, and then in your spare time, instead of playing golf or something, you spend time with organizations like the Montana Stock Growers doing advocacy and everything. But it is just incredibly important to us, and you can see that. You know, we've been here 138 years. We're very proud of that legacy. But I can tell you, we've got a board of directors that it's hard for me to look back and talk about accomplishments we've had, because our board of directors makes darn sure we're looking forward. We're focused on the Good. Next step in the future. So, you know, it takes a certain amount of time. You know, a lot of it we can do from home, and a lot of it there is travel, but it's so rewarding because of the people you get to work with.
Yeah, congratulations to you, and thanks for your advocacy. You're taking on, and you have for a while, you know, taking on a burden or a responsibility, so to speak, and it's not done lightly, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Tom, and I sure enjoy it, and I appreciate you
being
here.
Yeah, you did good. This was great. We'll be chatting down the road. I know we will. Yep, yeah, big session upcoming, too, and so it'll be. In fact, I got to take a break. Jim is standing by. If there's one question I should ask Jim, what would it be?
Well, I think we should talk with Jim about the new proposed beef enhancement program, because that's something really exciting we can do for our industry, and he'd be the right person to talk to about that rather than me, but it's an exciting thing.
Wait, perfect setup, John. Thank you. Appreciate that. We're back with more. We're live for the Montana Stock Growers Association from Montana. For Montana, it's Voices of Montana.
Today, we're all looking for ways to cut our monthly spending without cutting corners. When you become a Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana member, you get a partner who's by your side, helping you get more out of your coverage. See if you qualify for financial help, which could lower your monthly payments to $0. Enroll today at shopbluemt.com or call 1-855-434-BLUE. For over 80 years, Blue Cross and Blue Shield has been here with a variety of plans to fit your needs and budget. And as a member, you'll have access to quality health care and benefits like telehealth and emotional well-being programs. Enrollment is happening now. Go to shopbluemt.com or call 1-855-434-BLUE. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana will stand by you through it all. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Montana, a division of Healthcare Service Corporation, a mutual legal reserve company.
Welcome back. We are at 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483. You can text us a message here live from the annual convention of the Montana Straw Growers Association. What year was that? Oh, my gosh. They go 138 years. That is a long time, and that's a long time of working together. John Grandy is going to stay with us here, not tied up in a committee meeting at the moment. He is the incoming first vice president and soon to be past president, Jim Steinbeiser. How are you doing, Jim?
I'm doing good.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate
Thank
that.
You. We, Thanks, Tom.
We were joking because this is the day that they oust you. How does that feel?
Well, yeah.
Well deserved, maybe.
In a couple hours, I'll be a has been, and John will be. The up and coming.
I already told Tom that you're not going very far.
You know, it's been a hard push. I've been telling a few folks I bought a used car right before I became president, and I've got over 30,000 miles on it in 2 years, and it's hard to believe that. But what's really hard to believe is I have not covered this state.
That
I
is
tried,
right,
but. But it's been fun. Met a lot of people, had some awesome discussions. Probably the best thing is we got a great team. The officer team is top-notch, and when I'm gone, it should be pretty seamless. I think, you know, John has got a good handle of things, and we very, very much agree on the direction of MSGA, along with Leslie and the whole board. So just everybody's... It's just an awesome group of folks.
Let's get into some of these issues here. And John, you had mentioned the beef enhancement program. Basically, what is that, and why is that something on your guys' plate?
So it's a Montana State checkoff, and the beauty of it, so it would be another dollar, and it would be collected the same time you collect the checkoff we're all familiar with. It'll be handled very similarly. It'll go to the Montana Beef Council. So there'd be two pools of money handled separately, audited separately. But the beauty of a state checkoff is we wouldn't have near the high sideboards that the national checkoff has. We can promote Montana beef. We can promote U.S. beef. We can even do some production research if we think that makes a lot of sense. We just have way more latitude of what we can spend that dollar on. And the dollar is wholly determined by the Montana Beef Council how it's to be spent. Now, some of that would likely go to something national for maybe exports, or maybe it'll go to New York to promote beef there.
There you go.
But
yeah.
The whole dollar would be... fully determined within the Montana Beef Council, unlike the current checkoff where 50 cents stays in the state, 50 cents automatically goes to the national.
And a checkoff, for people who don't know, is basically, is it voluntary or is now required for membership per head to support national organizations and, of course, the local organizations in these advocacies and fighting for these issues and in also promoting beef, right?
Yes. So this wouldn't be used for lobbying or anything of
okay.
that sort.
Okay.
Another difference with the Montana state checkoff as proposed is you could ask for a refund. You could get your dollar back if you completely disagree with what's going on.
Okay, yeah.
Where you cannot on a national.
Yeah, that's a unique aspect here. Jim Steinbeiser is with us. John Grandy is here as well, Montana Stock Growers Association. In some of these issues, now you're in eastern Montana in the Richland County area.
Yes.
Martinsdale, Bear Country. Are you guys having an issue there?
We don't quite yet. We have had grizzlies pass through. We don't have a native population, but we've got wolves and lions and all that fun stuff, but we don't deal with the issues that they deal with coming out of the park or on the front.
Let's talk about how you make some movement, because when you look at the Endangered Species Act, and I think it's pretty evident to a lot of people, it's arguable that it is being manipulated in a lot of ways and misused, and that's been to the detriment of a lot of people in a lot of ways. But moving the ball, getting some guardrails up on that, I'm not sure there's a will in Congress to do it. How hard do you have to make this fight?
You just got to keep pressing. It's not a quarter mile race. This is a marathon, and it's just going to keep. When Leslie, John, and I were in D.C. last spring, we brought this issue up. They said, "Well, where's the state plan? We can't even consider this without a state plan." Well, there was a state plan. It was partially disagreed with. So now the state is working on a new plan. So there's step 1A or 1B, however you want to look at
right.
it. So it's just a steady press.
John. And you talk about the will in Congress, but as Jim points out, it's also within the agency, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, you know, is very reluctant to tackle this. Even they are fully cognizant and in agreement that the grizzly bear is not technically biologically an endangered species, that they know that it doesn't really fit the requirements. They just don't like the way the state of Montana, Wyoming, or Idaho, the way they think we're going to manage them. And that comes a little bit into, Tom, what you've talked about before, is some of the dysfunctional issues in Washington, D.C. between parties, that you have these agency back and forth. Maybe you have a Republican administration, then a Democrat administration, and just rather than Congress getting anything done, you have just the agencies making rulemaking, going back and forth and back
right.
and forth, and you have no level of consistency because of that. And that's a real issue that we'd like to see get significantly better.
Did you have a follow-up? Go ahead.
Well, you know, there's a lawsuit right now. The Forest Service has allowed cattle on five allotments in the Custer Gallatin Forest. There's been several environmental organizations that have sued the Forest Service saying we don't want cattle on those allotments because that could affect the grizzly bear population. We're afraid that you're going to want to protect the cattle from the grizzlies. And what a precedent that would set.
Yeah. Well, and this is an area where, as John, as you talked about, with some new staff coming in, or evaluation of maybe some new ways of doing things. Are there ways to get outside of the box and deal with, one, maybe getting some momentum for some reasonable changes to this act, or two, allowing states to have a little more breathing room to deal with it themselves?
You know, these bears have no fear.
Right.
Just a little bit of hunting pressure would give them some fear, and it would take away a lot of the problems. I mean, they're eating people, for goodness sake. They have no fear.
That's across the line, right? Pretty obvious.
It should be.
Yeah. So, behaviorally, we're seeing the activities of bears that some hunting pressure would probably help.
Yeah. Well, we've seen this in wolves, yeah. You know, when they were protected and we couldn't shoot at them to protect our livestock, they were getting to be quite a challenge, and they still are somewhat, but once there's been hunting and trapping allowed, they have more fear of humans, yeah. And they're less of a problem.
That state management would be a big improvement here. How do you get outside of the box on this issue, John?
Well, one of the things you mentioned, and you know, the litigation that Jim mentioned, obviously these things are very expensive, and even with our broad base of membership and everything, it's very hard to support litigation like that. And so that's where, in areas like this, but a whole lot of others, we need to lean on working with our partners, and we need to continue to be better in working with the Montana Public Lands Council, the National Public Lands Council, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, you know, our partners at other ag organizations, you know, not in this particular issue, but in some other issues, we lean heavily on our partnership with Montana State University and Extension. So, you know, one of the things we need to be very cognizant of is working with our partners and better communication.
Jim, that's something that John had talked about, that you've done well in communicating across the state of Montana. You got any advice for John as he takes over?
We need to fundraise for these lawsuits, because we're talking about getting engaged in this one, a Forest Service one we're talking about.
No choice.
How can you not? So we're already engaged in the APR one. That's really not what we normally do, but we're being forced to it right now, and this is costing money, so John, fundraise. I'll be helping you with that. Yeah.
But on the AP, Jim mentions, I mean, that's because, you know, we looked at that and made the decision whether we should hire our own separate counsel on that. The Phillips County, the North and South Phillips County grazing districts had already retained the Bud Fallon Law Offices to work with that. And we said it just makes more sense to partner with them than to reinvent the wheel. So that's why we joined up with those grazing districts as named partners. But there are other grazing districts. There are people like United Property Owners of Montana. There are other partners helping to fund that. It's just we're the named party.
Got 2 minutes. How did the Montana Stock Growers Association increase their membership, Jim, by 26% over the last couple of years?
Focus. Huh? It was a priority in our strategic plan, number one. And, you know, what you focus on is what you can improve. So a lot of work, but focus.
Simple approach, isn't it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What else, and you're going to be involved in this as well, but what are some of those top issues that you felt like, man, we maybe moved the ball along, or maybe there's something you're anxious about still getting in there and moving the ball forward with?
Oh, there's a lot of those.
I suppose. Now you get down to 1.5 minutes.
It's amazing how long it takes to do things, certainly.
John said that,
You know, I don't have, I mean, the state checkoff is near and dear to me. Okay. I would like to see that go through, and that's going to take some major work. I would still like to see a Montana-branded beef program of some sort. You know, I want to move away. I want us producers in Montana to move away from commodity beef. I want to change that mindset. I want us to change the mindset of marketing a real product that has real value that can really affect the ranchers in Montana.
I appreciate that. Anything to follow up there, John?
No, I think Jim said it pretty well. And like on this beef enhancement program, that didn't come out of the stockers, just that's a broad-based effort doing that. But Jim has been one of the very first leading proponents of that. And so he's done great work on that, but he's not done.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but no more than a dozen texts a day, right? Would that be fair? Jim Steinbeiser and John Grandy, thank you guys. I appreciate that. And good luck. We'll be talking down the road. I mean, these are issues that are important to all of us across the state of Montana. Thank you for advocacy on that.
Thank you. Right.
Back with more live from the Montana Stock Growers Association Convention.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Asked Montana farmer Walt Sales about the challenges of mental health in agriculture.
Another drought. There always is. There's always going to be another something. I grew up in a generation of you pulled yourself up by your bootstraps. But it's become evident is what do you do if you can't even find those bootstraps? If you need to talk to somebody, go to beyondtheweather.com for free counseling for Montana ag producers.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz.
Yeah, that's 2 decades strong. We're working on 3. Glad you're here. It's Friday, and we're glad to be here, too, at the Montana Stock Growers Association Convention and Trade Show. It takes 2 big hotels in Billings, Montana, to host this Northern Hotel. Good friends over there. And, of course, at the Doubletree is where we're at right now for the where the trade show is and our convention booth. Tom Schultz alongside Jim Steinbeiser is going to continue with us here. Karen Butt-Phelan not necessarily able to make it. And that doesn't surprise me as, you know, she's keynoting and busy. And Jim, so thanks for stepping in here. I appreciate that.
You bet.
Let's pick up some of those topics that we were kind of saving, and that's That's American Prairie Legal Counsel there. That's the big one. But in general, we're talking about consistency in our public lands policy, which for stock growers, I don't know how you operate with so much uncertainty out there. I guess maybe you're used to it because that's the nature of what is it? You're all in $1 million a year and you don't even get to see your hand first before. Anyway, taking on this issue, big decision, I think, for the stock growers, and why?
Well, we knew it was going to be a major financial commitment. But it's just important enough to the livestock industry in Montana. I mean, how could we not be engaged in that?
Yeah. But the difficulty of this, again, American Prairie, which is what they're known now, deep pockets, very deep pockets, and also they're going to, at times, we talk about that inconsistency, have friends in certain places that have authority, like the BLM. Maybe talk about this aspect alone and help people understand, what this BLM decision, how you feel it violated statute.
Yeah, so BLM awarded them the ability to make major changes in several of their allotments. So this isn't so much a bison issue. It's an issue of BLM singling out an entity, a group, and saying you don't have to follow the rules that everybody else has to follow. And these rules we mostly agree with. Ranchers helped put them together in some instances. You know, it's to improve rangelands. It's cross-fencing. It's additional water to move them off of streams, that kind of thing. All things that definitely have improved the range. And timed grazing and those kind of things. And they said, you know what, folks, you don't have to do those. We just think that you got it figured out. You don't have to do that. Everybody else does, but you don't have to.
Yeah. That'll take some time, won't it? I mean, what do you expect this appeal process to go through?
Well, that's far beyond our control, but, the experience of the past and these kind of things, it could be years.
What about sage grouse? Where are you guys at with that now?
Well, we're hopeful that it's not going to be listed. You know, the state has a plan. That was the agreement several years back. If the states all had the states with sage grouse habitat and sage grouse would have a solid management plan to protect the grouse and enhance its welfare, that it would not be listed. And so all the states with major sage grouse have done that. And so that's been the agreement, and we hope that they'll stick to it.
Yeah, and that's an interesting aspect there, too, because those management plans, they take years to unfold, and there's a lot of collaboration that goes in those. Do you feel they're solid?
I think so. I mean, there was a lot of effort put into Montana's plan. They took it very seriously because you don't want a species to be listed as endangered. There's so many restrictions with that. And, so if you can have a management plan that does what the concerned folks are concerned about, I guess, let's do it. Let's do it. And it's not near as intrusive on landowners.
Do you worry about, and I mention this frequently because I for me it would be worrisome, is that they're continually moving the goalposts. We saw that with the wolves. We see that with the bears. I don't doubt we'll see that with the sage grouse or whatever. Even the mountain lion, as Ethan Lane had said down the road. Are you concerned about organizations like yourself and collaboration falling apart if they keep moving those goalposts?
Well, Tom, a lot of this has to do, we're being manipulated. There are organizations using species and threatening to list them as ways to affect our business. So their ultimate goal might not be so much that species. Their ultimate goal is to put pressure on cattlemen.
Farm bill's upcoming as well. Got thoughts on that? I know the stock growers are not huge I shouldn't say as involved as perhaps maybe the grain growers are, but there's conservation programs that the stock growers have fostered, created, and basically are there because of the stock growers. What's the Farm Bill going to be like in crafting that?
Well, I don't know what it's going to be like, but there's less money. So I would expect that they're going to pare down some of these programs, but we'll see how it looks. But I'm pretty sure that'll be the first order of business. Is, you know, we got to make some cuts. Where are they going to be?
We haven't talked a ton about you know, in this hour anyway. It is talked about here, the good things that are going on in the industry. Prices are, well, again, that's maybe a double-edged sword at times, too. Your inputs are higher, but prices are higher as well. You come off of this drought. You come where a year after you had to do a lot of culling of herds. I heard different statistics on that. It came out to me, and your impression on this, it wasn't as bad as maybe we had thought it was going to be in terms of losing stock in the state of Montana. What's the status of that?
You know, I think that we probably lost roughly 25% of our herd.
Okay.
Maybe not quite that much. Certain areas higher than that, and some areas weren't much affected at all. So, but somewhere in there, 20-25% reduction. You know, the forecast is looking good for next year. We're finally breaking this weather pattern. That's the prediction. We'll see, you know. But certainly this winter is more of a normal winter. That can indicate that you know, things could be looking up. And that is the forecast. And certainly cattle markets, you know, they're not rising as fast as we thought they would, but they are. And maybe with a slower rise, maybe it'll hold up there a little bit longer. Our last cattle cycle, it climbed rapidly. And then it dropped rapidly. That's not a healthy business model. So if we could have a slower rise and a slower drop, that certainly would be very helpful to our industry.
Give us a word about Yellowstone bison. We've known about the Parks bison herd and the conflicts possibly with brucellosis for a lot of years now. There's been some management plans. Again, it's one of those cases where that goalpost, that goal line gets moved a little bit from time to time too. Your thoughts?
Well, there's parts of the interested parties that feel emboldened right now. I suspect partially because of the administration we have now. But there is a call by many environmental side and in the Indian Nation side for more bison in the park. Currently we have over 6,000 bison, and there's been many studies that say that, you know, 3,000 is where it should be.
Yeah.
So there's currently 6, and there's some entities that want more. They want them crowded so that they'll move out of the park and claim more land. That's a challenge for us. Brucellosis is real, and when they move out of the park, it affects not only our cattle, which is big, but brucellosis affects humans. There are people who have died from brucellosis. It's not common, but it does happen. So it's something we don't want to spread more than it already has.
And I remember John mentioning that. And in fact, Joe Dooling swung by here as well. He's a rancher and in the Helena area, had mentioned that. Make sure that people understand that brucellosis is not just like a cattle industry issue. It's a health issue.
It absolutely is. Yeah, it's a nasty disease.
Are we where are we at? It feels like, wow, we kind of got past this issue, but we're not past it far enough to the point where it couldn't resurface again dramatically?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. No, yeah. We're not past this issue, but we've been doing a fairly good job of restraining it. But with a call for more bison in park, it's going to increase the pressure for them to leave the park, which increases these challenges for everybody.
Gotcha. How are folks in eastern Montana, Richland County, and that area, and how's the egg industry there?
Doing good. We went through 2 major years of drought. Fortunately, last spring we had a lot of good rain, generally, I mean, there's some areas more than others, but generally increased rain. Unfortunately, it got hot and dry later. Grasshoppers come and raise some heck with us. But compared to the previous 2 years, at least we're trending in the right direction. And with this forecast, hopefully we're good to go.
Yeah. Jim, thanks for your advocacy for this. And I know you'll continue in that vein as well. And it's very needed, and it's very helpful, too. Appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Tom, for your interest.
Yep. Jim Steinbeiser, who is the outgoing president, as we teased earlier. He'll be kicked out of here. What time is it today that you actually... And are they going to throw you a parade and throw you out the door?
I don't know how it goes for sure, okay. But around noon.
High noon. High noon, that's a good way to put it, yeah. Thank you, Jim, appreciate that.
Thank you.
We'll take a break and come on back. Some final thoughts on the Farm Bill when we come on back. More, it's from Montana for Montana, and we are live from Montana Stock Growers Association here in Billings, Montana. Back with more in a bit.
Rewarding Clear isn't all about the benefits and the bonuses, but that's a lot of it. BNSF Railway is hiring for laborers, welders, truck drivers, conductors, and more. See more. Go further. Apply at jobs.bnsf.com. Positions are available across Montana, Wyoming, North Dakota, and South Dakota. A career at BNSF will bring the benefits and the bonuses and the pride that comes with moving the American economy forward. Apply at jobs.bnsf.com.
Schultz here, now joined by Brett McCray as we're wrapping up the Montana Stock Growers Association Convention with some thoughts about a conversation. And Brett, thanks for being here. About the Farm Bill, heard from Ethan Lane, who's with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, talking about delegations need to get involved here. We need to hold them accountable. But one thing that I was left there was his impression that it's going to be a difficult row to hoe to get that Farm Bill across the line.
Yeah, that's right, Tom. I mean, Brett McCray here with the Northern Ag Network, of course, covering the ag news and market side of things. But one thing we heard from Ethan Lane yesterday, of course, the VP of Government Affairs with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, speaking to members here at the Montana Stock Growers Association, the state convention in Billings, major movement unlikely in the chambers of Congress, and that's kind of because, you know, they got some new leadership coming in with stuff like that here at the end of the session, and he said there's a tremendous amount of education that is going to have to go on for these members as they're coming in and kind of unfamiliar with the issues that are maybe important to ag, and, you know, maybe kind of influenced sort of coming into this position as a politician and maybe looking more to vote politically instead of more in line with what some of their constituents might want. So he said they're going to be focused on.
I like that. And then he also noted that these organizations that advocate through the Farm Bill, there's a lot of them there. It's not just about farmers. It's a big part of its nutrition. In fact, a major part of its nutrition. But organizations need to be clear about what it is that they want in this process.
Definitely. And the thing about the Farm Bill that a lot of these organizations and a lot of people have kind of put out there is that it's a tough process, right? Because it is so tied to the nutrition program, which is a big part of the Farm Bill, and a lot of the organizations advocate for keeping those two components together because it's a big funding priority for a lot of different interests and everything. So they advocate for keeping those together. But at the end of the day, it is a tough process trying to get a lot of these different things happening.
And again, that was from Ethan Lane with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He talked a bit of it, and we only got like about 30 seconds here. But do you get that, you feel that sense, that urban-rural division that creates difficulties in passing maybe a farm bill?
Well, it definitely, like you said, it's kind of the education, back to the education thing. There are definitely some urban senators that don't really realize how critical some of these programs that are paid for in the Farm Bill are to our farmers and ranchers, you know, in Montana and across the West and across the nation. But that's why we have these organizations that need to educate people or need to educate these senators on these programs and why they're so necessary.
And the public as well. We'll continue to do that. Brett McCray, Northern Ag Network, thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, and thank you all for joining us here as well. Tom Schultz, thanks to Cody Ross in studio. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.